Device Nation, the voice of operative orthopedics.
Greetings, everyone. This is Kevin Brown, your humble ASR, and this is Device Nation, the voice of operative orthopedics. Verily, I say unto you, we have veritable vernal, oh my gosh, I sound so country when I say that, vernal and verdant vibrations for you today. Those two words, well, they can only mean one thing. Spring is in the air. Pollen, well, that's the only thing not on back order. And that daylight savings time was such a butt kicker for me this year. Am I the only one that hates this spring forward nonsense? The inaugural Monday. There I was in my bed dreaming I was in a case with the most difficult surgeon I've ever worked with. He looked at a size 6 femur and he said, you know, let's go with a 00. I'm like, what the heck? It's a dream, right? I'm officially in the OR in my underwear. My teeth are missing again. So they start mixing cement. That's key. I go out in the hallway and rummage through an impossibly disorganized storage cabinet looking for a 00. Right? Implants are everywhere. Most of them lefts. There it is. No. I drop it. They're calling me from the room. The cement is setting up. It's officially disappeared. I've lost it again, and my alarm goes off. Now what am I going to do? They're still waiting for that implant. Now here's the thing. If I had just had that extra hour, I just know I could have located that 00 right femur or a reasonable facsimile. I mean, I just had it. I thought about hitting the snooze button. I know that sounds so neurotic, trying to go back to sleep just to complete the dream. Maybe we can sort all this out in the extra 8 minutes. I need closure, but Zeke, well, he would have none of that. He's officially in the bed at this point with his tongue in my ear. Now, for new listeners, Zeke is not the name of my wife. No, Zeke is our incredible 8-month-old German Shepherd and the official mascot of Device Nation, graduating into bite training soon. I'm excited. He's so excited. He loves wrapping his teeth around anything and everything, like my cat's head. I know it's crazy. He literally puts her head in his mouth. Drool is going everywhere, and the cat is purring. Why? Because she's stupid. My wife and I, on the other hand, not stupid. We see the impending emergency vet bill. As we know, it's only going to happen on nights and weekends. I never get used to seeing the cat's head in the dog's mouth. I find myself attempting to telepathically communicate to the dog every time. Why? Because you don't want to say something that may lead to startling him into decapitating this stupid cat. So you mumble in your mind, please don't bite down. Please don't bite down. Well, that's why bite training is going to be so great. Because biting down, that's a good boy. Well, my wife and I were talking about what would be the best command for attack. I suggested cotton-headed ninny muggins because nobody's going to accidentally say that at the park, and the suspect's definitely never going to see that coming. Surprisingly, I got a little pushback on that. So if you have an idea, what would be a great ortho-themed word that we could use for attack? I want to hear it. Let me know. So look, raising a dog that can attack, that's a lot different than raising a lab, we're discovering. Our trainer sat us down the first session and said, look, guys, this is a different type of dog. He demands high love and high boundaries. He needs to know that you care for him, but he also needs to know in no uncertain terms what he can or cannot do, or he will destroy your life and your house. We took that to heart, instituted a no-nonsense program while at the same time taking a moment every day to demonstrate how much we care for them. A good brushing in the morning before everybody heads their separate ways. And every night I get on the floor, he knows what's coming. He flops upside down in my lap, which is getting a little crazy given he's almost 100 pounds now. He gets a nice long scratch and encouraging words. Last night we were watching TV. I just got this sixth sense I was being watched. I look over to my left and he is staring me down. And I realize he's waiting for it. It's time for the big scratch. It has changed everything, by the way. He's just a completely different dog. He needed that. High boundaries and high love. Now, what does this have to do with our industry? Everything. But we're going to have to zoom in a little. Let's give you something to chew on that doesn't involve ruining one of your shoes. What are the four things that drive any company? Longtime listeners know how much Device Nation loves P words, and today you will not be disappointed. Here you go, in no particular order, profit. This thing doesn't run on air. It's not a bad word here. We need to make money and a lot of it. People. This speaks to love, how you care for the people that work for you and around you. Thirdly, let's look at product. Nothing happens until something gets sold. What is that something? A product, which can be an inanimate object or a service. And then lastly, process. This speaks to boundaries, right? What you can and can't do, what you should be doing, how you should be doing it, and on and on. So there I was, giving Zeke the scratch of his life one night. He makes these crazy crazy Chewbacca noises, which is just hilarious when you do that. This profundity landed in my lap. When I first started in this industry, what drove everything was a focus on people and product. We were all cared for at a very high level, and product drove everything. You had to know your features and benefits. Where was profit? It was down at the bottom somewhere. Why? Because it was taking care of itself, because we were all on this crazy growth trajectory. And process? Compliance didn't even really exist, and operations was utterly and completely subordinate to sales. I know that sounds crazy. Whatever needed to happen to support the field, operations made it happen. No questions asked. Now, does that sound like what's going on today? Well, I'll answer it for you. Not at all. Us old timers have seen quite the tectonic shift, haven't we? As ASP has declined, that growth trajectory has come to a screeching halt. And now what seems to be driving everything for many companies is a near 100% focus on two things. Which two of the four do you think it is? Process, people, profit, product? I'll give you a second. Survey said process and profit. Well, what happened to people and product? Well, they're somewhere, but they're way down at the bottom somewhere. The products are mostly commoditized now, and people, well, they are subordinate to profit and process. Is that a good thing? What do you think? Ponder that. There's a last P word for you for a minute as we head down the drag strip known as I-95 and head to South Florida. Device Nation was basking in the perfect weather there recently. I know it's a burden, but we do it for you, sourcing a few BMPs for our listeners. BMPs, you say? Basic metabolic panel, bone morphogenetic proteins. All great answers, fellow ortho nerd. But the BMPs we're working on is, quote, beyond metal and plastic, unquote. Us box openers, we know the future is thinking outside the box as we open. I'm sure you've all noticed that box has a target on it lately, right? So Device Nation is looking at products, anything and everything outside that box that can make us both a valuable resource and bring value to our customer base serving people. It's all about serving people, right? This can take many forms, from products that can generate revenue streams for you and your surgeon, like Corganics for a CBD solution, to things like the EasyTrax OneTrace system that can make everybody's life easier during an operative day and help you add some cases to the schedule. BMPs, beyond metal and plastic. A huge BMP coming your way today. PitchSync, developed by former box opener Stephen Flutie. That last name should ring a bell, but don't get distracted. Stay focused, because we're covering a lot of ground today. Just an inspiring story and a service that could make you both a partner and a peddler. You're going to want to hang around for that. It's so cool. But first, I had a conversation with one of my relatives in Miami who worked his entire life at Sears and Roebuck. Remember them? A company that experienced what industry observers described as one of the most monumental collapses in business history. I realized after taking a page of notes, this story just has to be shared. And today is the day. Device Nation brings you 82 years of hard-fought wisdom. Barry, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Tell us about your career at Sears and Roebuck, sir.
I answered an ad in the Miami Herald in the paper. They were looking for appliance technicians on washers and dryers. I'd been a sonar technician in the Navy, so I took a chance on getting a job there. So I think it was in short 63 or 64.
So there you are, 30 years under your belt. So many promotions, working in everything from scheduling to technician, running a staff of technicians, all the way to operations manager. Tell us what was going on there towards the end of your tenure.
Things were going real good until Sears started restructuring and changing. What exactly year I think that started happening, I would say, was about 92. About 1992, they called us into a big meeting in Orlando, and the guy that was in charge of service nationwide was there, and he was holding meetings all over the United States, and told us that we had to get rid of this family attitude.
So what did they mean by family attitude?
Sears took very good care of their employees. Sears had two rules. Rule number one was the customer was always right. Rule number two was, if in doubt, rule number one applies. In other words, we always took care of our customer no matter what. Even if the customer was wrong, we're still getting the benefit of the doubt. The more we wound up giving away to the customers, the more they came back and kept us as where they bought everything. So if it cost us, if the customer took advantage of us, that was okay, because we knew we were keeping that customer. So it was very easy as a person working for Sears to take care of customers, because you had one job. Make the customer happy.
They did an amazing job taking care of the customers. What about the employees?
Sears was a wonderful place to work for. We had an employee accommodation account called the EAA account, where an employee could go into a Sears store and buy anything in the store up to worth 2 weeks of your salary. Let's say you're making $100 a week. I'm using that as just a round figure. You could buy something for $200 a week, and they would withdraw it from your paycheck with no interest and 10% a week. You also got discounts in the store. You got your pay stub or your the stub off of your time card. You carried it with you. It had your identification number on it. And when you walked into the store, you got discounts on anything you bought. It was, if I remember right, it was 20% on jewelry. I think it might have been 20% on clothing and jewelry, and everything else was 10%. So they really took care of their employees. And they bent over backwards. The kind of meetings we used to have were all upbeat. They used to have contests for the technicians. The first year of the Miami Dolphins, they had a contest for selling the most maintenance agreements. I won a contest once that gave me 2 season tickets to the Miami Dolphins' initial season. And my father and his friend used those same tickets for years and years and years because I gave them to my dad. He renewed them every year. We used to have a big Christmas party at the warehouse every year. We took such good care of our technicians. We really did. And when this guy White held that meeting in Orlando, everything we did then came to an end.
Well, something else that came to an end around that same time that all these changes were going on was the ubiquitous Sears catalog, right?
You used to get a free catalog if you went to the store, and the Christmas catalog got mailed to every house in the nation.
Wow.
Everybody had the Christmas catalog in their house. I can't remember a time we didn't order presents from the Sears catalog. And he stopped it. They decided to get out of that business. And it was shortly after that, isn't it, that Amazon started?
Correct. I'm looking at the last catalog that Sears put out. It was 93, and Amazon, 1994.
Think of the market Sears could have had. My stock would be worth so much money if Sears would have not closed that down.
You would be buying a safe from the Sears catalog to put all your money in. Well, tell us, what all could you buy in a Sears catalog?
Well, Sears sold everything from baby chicks, tractors. At one time I heard, I didn't see this, but at one time back in, I guess it was in the 30s, Sears actually came out with an automobile that they sold for 1 year, a Sears mobile. Sears sold everything for your automobile. They sold everything for your house. They sold it. Their tools were the best in the nation. Their hand tools were guaranteed for life. For life. Anytime you broke a Craftsman tool, go to the retail store with it, and they give you a brand new and no questions asked. I still have a toolbox full of Craftsman tools, but if something breaks now, I can't exchange it anymore because when they went under, that rule went away with it. They sold all the clothing that you could possibly think of, from tuxedos to farmwear. They sold ladies' dresses, ladies' hats. They sold all types of shoes. I mean, you name it, they sold it.
One thing I distinctly remember, Barry, is that so much of what they sold had that stamp of quality on it, whether you're talking about a diehard battery, even tough skin jeans, right?
You couldn't wear out a tough skin jeans. I put them on my kids. And they trusted their people, Kevin. They allowed us to make the decisions to help customers. We didn't have to call somebody and say, listen, can I do this for the customer? We took care of the customer. If we kept that customer happy and from complaining, Sears was happy about it because we couldn't give the store away. Hard as we tried, we couldn't give the store away.
Interesting that you say that, Barry, because somebody actually ended up giving the store away. Tell us what happened there at the end.
The guy that came in, I think he came in from Canada, and I think his name was, last name was Lacey. He took over as a CEO, and the first thing he did is he said, we are a retail organization, and we're going to stay a retail organization. We used to have candy stores inside of our retail stores, and we also had, not inside the candy store, we had cafeterias. You could have lunch in Sears, go through the cafeteria line, get sandwiches, salads, soups. You did away with everything. You did away with all of that. It breaks my heart. You know, when you work for a place for as long as I did, that's a lot of years. That's a lot of years.
So you and about 4,000 other managers, I believe, would end up taking the buyout just to be shown the door, so to speak. I'm curious, now that the dust has settled and you've had some years to contemplate what happened, any takeaways from you from your time there?
Absolutely. Number one, always be truthful with your employees. Have your employees always be truthful with their customers. Don't try to fool customers. Don't try to lie to customers. Be truthful with them. Number two, if you take good care of your employees will take good care of your customers. A happy employee makes happy customers. A miserable employee will give you miserable customers. If an employee doesn't believe in the company he's worked for, how can he possibly be a good representative of that company? That's my words of advice. I love Sears. It breaks my heart, Kevin, when I think back and saw them going away.
Thank you so much, Barry. Sage words there, and so relevant to our discussion today. Sears built this incredible franchise on two words, people and product. And then with competition looming from Walmart and Amazon, shrinking margins and a change of leadership, process and profit, became the new mantra. It was gradual and it was heartbreaking. Wake up one day and that family atmosphere has disappeared. The candy store is gone. There's no cafeteria. And oh, you've got to buy your own surgical techniques now. And that debit for the wasted implant is more than the hospital pays for it. We're certainly seeing similarities to this in our space these days, aren't we? I had a rep tell me this just recently. And I quote, "I feel like I woke up one day and had been successfully transitioned from sales to operations." Well, what are we to do with all that? The Undertaker knows what to do. Construct a 4-point plan that revolves around complaining. The caretaker rep believes they can just keep their head down and work harder. It's all going to settle down, right? In spite of a looming 5% commission rate and spiraling ASP. Got news for you, it won't. Now, the Overtaker rep has figured it out and knows that this is the most exciting time in this space. I say it all the time because I believe it's true. The real excitement is the BMPs, making people and product cool again. Yeah, we're going to put on our tough skins and charge up that diehard battery. We're going retro, bringing entrepreneurial solutions to what many think is a stagnant space these days, right? When I saw how PitchSync could leverage their amazing product to serve the people in our space, I knew profit was just around the corner for our amazing listeners. See how we brought all that together. Stephen Flutie, welcome to Device Nation, sir.
Well, Kevin, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'll give you the floor, sir. Take a minute, introduce yourself. Tell us what got you into this space.
So I'm from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I played football my entire life, but unfortunately caught the injury bug, and I became extremely fascinated with just the entire treatment process, from diagnostic to the surgical to post-operative care. However, I knew I was never getting into med school. So learned about what a med rep was and got an internship from there, and the rest is history.
Reps have this morbid curiosity about injuries. If you don't mind me asking, what happened?
So I've had everything from a hip scope on my left leg, both shoulders, you know, both cuffs and labrums, but most recently, I've had, unfortunately, a series of knee surgeries where I had a distal femoral osteotomy and an osteochondral allograft transplant. And I've had a few more from there and actually one more to go with just some stress fractures on my right leg. So it's been some time, but it's what propelled my interest in this industry. So it's frustrating, but I'm happy for it.
Well, Stephen, Device Nation is standing with you on this surgical journey, sir. Football's loss is our gain, apparently. And you know, when you brought up your name associated with football, and I thought about your last name, any connection to quarterback Doug Flutie?
Yes. So Doug is actually my cousin, an amazing person, and was such a great name in football. So it was definitely helpful growing up with that last name and the relationship.
Stephen, we've got a lot of young people in the audience that probably have no idea who Doug Flutie is. Fill in that trivia box for them.
Yeah. So Doug Flutie was essentially the Tim Tebow of the 80s. However, he was undersized. He's like 5'10", 5'11", a little bit taller than I am. But he was still has one of the best plays in college football and a last-minute Hail Mary. He played for Boston College. This was against the University of Miami. He's running around the pocket and just tossed one up with no time on the clock. And next thing you know, touchdown, Boston College wins, and then he won the Heisman Trophy from there.
And the Hail Mary was born.
Yep.
Well, one thing that certainly wasn't a Hail Mary, it was an intentional step in our industry's direction. Tell us about what would become a defining moment for you at FAU.
Yeah, so again, the injury bug kind of piqued my interest, and I knew I wouldn't get in medical school, and I was at Florida Atlantic University in Boca at the time. And knew I wanted to try to get into med sales somehow. There was a career fair, and I did some research of companies there. I knew I wanted to be an ortho, and there was only realistically one company there, and that was the Biomet distributorship. So I went up, introduced myself, gave my resume, had a couple interviews with them. Next thing you know, I got an internship and was able to get my foot in the door from there.
Where would that internship launch you to next?
Fortunately, some personal issues, and I ended up not finishing college, but I knew I still wanted to get in the industry. So I found a foot and ankle distributorship, kind of selling me too foot and ankle products, but it was commission only. So I had to work my butt off. I worked two other jobs just to be able to afford to go to my job, and I knew I had to try to find a way to make a name for myself in this industry, not having the degree. So from there, I just decided I have to be the best in the OR in the surgery center I was at, which for me was knowing where all the instrumentation was in case anything went wrong, I could go run and grab something and the circulating nurse could stay in the room. And my goal was realistically to be just an extension to the clinical team.
Great strategy there, sir. Where would that lead you to next?
That ended up leading me into a job with Stryker Sports Medicine and a distributorship that carried 30 different lines. Foot and ankle, sports med, joint recon, trauma, you name it, we did it there. And I met some of the most amazing people. Both Kevin and Dale Faber were my mentors and to this day still very good friends. What they really wanted to do was, again, be an extension of the clinical team and be the best person clinically we could. And at that time, Stryker did not have a full portfolio. So you had to know Biomet, you had to know Arthrex, you had to know everybody's products to make sure you can put together a full shoulder procedure.
Right.
But what Stryker did a really good job was hip scopes. They acquired Pivot back in the day, and I got the opportunity to really focus on hip scopes and sit in the room of one of the world's leading hip arthroscopists every week for 8 to 10. That was truly an amazing learning experience where this doctor was a good friend. He actually operated on my leg as well. But after a couple of years, he ended up leaving and moving out of the state. By him moving out of the state, it allowed me to actually move my role to a territory manager down in Miami.
So I understand your successes there would actually lead to an exciting opportunity in a marketing role, right?
Yes. So I had one big deal with a hip scope team in Miami that we structured a great deal that really was partnering with the facility. They got everything they wanted without a dollar out of pocket, realistically, which got the attention of marketing. And I actually had zero interest in moving to a marketing role and taking that pay cut. But I ended up taking a leap of faith, moving to Denver, didn't know a soul. It was one of the best ideas I've ever had. And I grew more in that role than I ever could have imagined. You learn more on the business development side, Kevin, than you could ever imagine.
I'll
from
bet.
Being on calls with manufacturers in Israel, engineers in Ireland, San Jose, doing training calls with a whole company. It was an amazing opportunity. I'm really, really happy that I made that leap.
I've often wondered when you step into a role like that and you're used to working in the OR your whole life, what does that transition look like?
It's challenging. I mean, you're in control of your business when you're a rep, but when you're now a marketing person, you've got to be at the office at 8 a.m. inside an office all day. And you're used to being in the car and putting out fires and surgery. It's very different.
Right.
So now you're in a room with everybody that's making the company run and you're sitting there like, what is going on? This is wild that I'm here. But I love that role. A couple of years into that, I decided exactly what you were saying. I missed the OR. So I did expand out and moved into a role with Smith & Nephew as the Regeneten area manager in Colorado, Wyoming, and Nebraska.
I know it's anecdotal, but it seems like every surgeon I know that uses Regeneten really likes that product.
It's truly a game-changing and career-changing product. It's once in a career do you have an opportunity to work with a product that is backed by the clinical knowledge that it has, as well as you can immediately see an impact it makes on patients' lives. The other great thing is the entire product can be implanted within 5 to 7 minutes.
Right.
And it's labeled as an implant. So it's a win-win for absolutely everybody. It was a great time in my career. I got to work with an amazing group of sports reps, a great company, and some of the best doctors in the world at Vail Orthopedics.
So fast forward 2024 and Pitch Sync is born. Got a lot of questions, but first, how did you come up with that name?
Yeah, so it's fun. In sales or any most types of sales, you're told to give your elevator pitch. You're told to give a quick pitch of what you're doing. In medical sales, you're told to give a scrub sink pitch. And so what we decided is a lot of these innovative concepts and conversations happen around the scrub sink.
Sure.
So we want to be pitched around the sink. So that's where the name came to be.
Love it. How'd you come up with the idea for it?
So the concept took place in 2016 when I was working with hip arthroscopist and he had some custom instrumentation. I ended up trying to get him to work with Stryker at the time to try to help develop some more that he was working on. We just got slow-noed through the entire process. So Stryker said, we love it, we love it, we love it. And this is how almost every company works. But at the end of it, several months later, we just don't have the manpower to take it on. But let's keep talking. And so that time I knew, wow, there's something missing in the market. And then fast forward to my marketing role, we would get pitched 100 times a year from doctors or reps that had products that they wanted to develop, but they had nowhere to go. And again, the slow no took place all the time. So we came up with was essentially a two-sided talent marketplace where anyone who wants to develop a product find the resources they need immediately. And that's what our goal is at PitchSync.
I'm laughing here at the slow no. Anybody that's done this job long enough knows what that's all about. It really is hard to get a surgeon's idea through corporate these days, just because of all the financial challenges and the squeeze on our market right now, isn't it? We don't want to tell the surgeon no, but invariably we end up hitting that wall at some point, right? But we just try to put it off as long as we can, hence the slow no.
It's a challenge that we really wanted to try to fix at PitchSync. Kevin, you guys have developed a few products and patents. How long did that process take to try to get that through?
A super long time. I mean, one of my challenges is that, okay, there's certain things I'm good at, but there's a lot of things that I really suck at. And finding people to help me through that process in those areas where I do need help was really challenging. I didn't know who could make me a 3D model. I didn't know who could help me with some market research and on. So it took way longer than it needed to.
That's what we aim to fix. You know, you can post a job on our platform and you could find those highly vetted resources within a few minutes rather than a few months.
So walk us through it, Stephen. Where is PitchSync right now and how does it work?
So Kevin, you just talked about how challenging it was to find qualified, vetted talent. And that's really what we're doing at PitchSync. PitchSync has a high-end talent marketplace with over 100 plus independent consultants right now with at least 18 and a half years of work experience. So what we want to do is we want to allow doctors, reps, startups, or anyone who wants to develop a medical device, take back the control and empower them to develop products the way they want to within a matter of minutes, not months. And we've really pushed hard on partnerships and building a community that's empowering each other. And I couldn't be more happy with the people that we've partnered with. MedTech Voice and Dreamon Studios are helping our innovators build a voice. We've also partnered with Physicians First Bancor for financing, and that team has been absolutely amazing. And then we also have a group of manufacturers that we're partnering with as well for any extremely complex projects. So the platform itself is still not launched, but we are pushing products through manually at this point. The feedback has been way further than I could have ever imagined.
So let's break this down into two different scenarios. Let's look at scenario number one. You've got an idea and you want to get it from a sketch on a napkin to commercialization. What would next steps look like and where does PitchSync come in?
Someone will come to our platform. They will post a job or a project. It can be, I need an engineer to help reverse engineer my drill guide. I want it done in 1 to 6 months. My budget is X. Post it, and immediately from there, our algorithm will match you with the appropriate engineers. From there, you will invite them to the job. That engineer has to sign an NDA before allowing to see the rest of the job details. Once they sign the NDA, the job page expands and they can see this is the budget, this is the time frame, this is all the information. If you click accept as a consultant, then you move through the interview process. The interview process is as easy as you can email back, or there's a custom calendar link to set up a Zoom call. So we really wanted to streamline what took months and break that down in just a few minutes.
How does everybody get paid?
Payments are done through an escrow system, so it's extremely safe and secure. That's how it works. It takes just a few minutes just to post a job and find all the resources needed. And you could find engineers, IP attorneys, regulatory professionals, marketing, go-to-market strategists, research consultants, writing. We've got over 15 categories of consultants that you can come find your resources for.
How broad of a scope are we talking about here in this particular scenario? What if it's not necessarily a cannula that you're wanting to develop? Maybe you want to start a podcast. Maybe you want to build a brand around something in our space. How wide does this go?
Yeah, it could be any number of things. So yeah, even podcasting fits in with what we want to do. If it's empowering surgeons to build their dreams, then we want you on our board.
Awesome. Well, let's look at scenario two, talking about dreams. A dreaming listener is thinking to themselves right now, you know, I have a service to offer the world, somebody that may have a job out there that I might be able to help them on. I know marketing, I know 3D printing, graphic design, podcasting, whatever. What would next steps look like for them to connect them with someone who does have a need?
So the next steps, if you have a service that you want to offer, is you would go onto our website, pitchsync.com. Click sign up, and then you would put your profile in place. And essentially what we're looking for is what you would want to put on LinkedIn and any additional services, your hourly rates, calendar links. And then there's a video section where you'll be able to actually make a recording of your services from there, you're searchable within our platform.
I get super excited about that, Stephen, and I hope the audience is as well. You just gave them the ability to make themselves their own sideline and monetize that skill set that they have to serve our community.
That's exactly what we want to do, is be able to offer more opportunities for the MedTech community to grow.
Opportunities, indeed. I mean, one opportunity that just pops in my head as we talk about this whole partner versus peddler dynamic. If I'm a rep that works with a surgeon that has an idea, then connecting them with PitchSync would certainly make me a partner with them, and it might have some advantages over plugging it with the company I work for, right?
Correct. Being in that marketing role, I was in that position where reps would come to me weekly and say, I love this. I have a doctor that has an idea. I'd love to help him with this. And we're going to say no most of the time. And then as a rep, you don't know what to do. But now you can become more of a resource to your surgeons by saying, well, doc, so-and-so might have said no, but I actually know a company, PitchSync, that can actually help us create this product in what we think would be half the time than what it would typically take a larger medtech company to do so. So I think it just continues to add more opportunity for our reps to become resources.
All about being a resource these days, bringing value, being a partner. We know from economics, there's no such thing as a free lunch, by the way. How do you monetize all this?
So what we make money is we charge a 7.5% transaction fee per job posting or project posting. It's free to post the job, but there is a 7.5% transaction fee, which is significantly much lower than most marketplaces out there.
So what does next steps look like for audience members wanting to link with PitchSync, either posting a job or posting their skills to potentially engage in a job?
What a user would do, or a client wanting to develop a product, you would go to pitchsync.com and sign up for a user profile, whether that be a consultant or a client, or you can email me at stephen@pitchsync.com and we could set up some time to walk through that process.
Stephen, I don't know what I'm more impressed with here, PitchSync as a concept or you personally. I mean, you have just done an incredible job with what you've had to work with over so many years. I love your rep credentials. I know you have to have some advice for reps listening that want to embody what you are, the quintessential overtaker rep.
Yeah, I would say push yourself way past your comfort zones and you'll continue to grow if you do. And I know that's cliche, but I mean, I look at going into that marketing role, my biggest fear was public speaking. Next thing you know, you're on stage at a national sales meeting in front of the entire company. And then if you have an idea that you just can't stop thinking about, and that's what PitchSync was to us, put pen on paper, make a plan, execute that plan, and go for it. Do it in an analytical way, making sure that you're taking feedback from everybody, both good and bad. And then what I've learned in this is don't allow yourself to make a fallback plan. Once you do, then you're already setting yourself up for failure. If you just put your nose down and go for it and not allow yourself to have a fallback plan, I think that's really what's pushed us. And then wake up every day knowing this is scary. I'm going after my dreams, and I think my dreams are going to make an impact on the industry.
That's great stuff, sir. I heard this awesome quote just this morning. Never let the noise of limitations drown out the sound of possibilities. I immediately thought of you. I thought of PitchSync. That's exactly what you're doing, creating the sound of possibilities. Well done. I am so excited about this project.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me. This has been a blast.
Wow, what an inspiring story. Love this product. Love the people behind it, because we're all about people and products here at Device Nation, if you hadn't figured that out today. Thank you, Stephen Flutie, for creating this amazing platform. Again, if you or your surgeon have that idea on a napkin or you have a skill set that can serve our community, we'll see you over at PitchSync.com. I talked with three reps this week. None of them knew what this podcast was about, but they were all sharing similar stories of how process and profit were affecting them personally, and to be honest with you, negatively. The lack of care on top of that from those above them was making an already challenging job really tough. No matter what the industry, and Sears was such a great example of it, tough times instinctively bring high process, high boundaries, high control, and rarely, if never, do they go back from there. So what do we do with that? Finally answer that ad for a dining room manager at Bucky's for six figures. They could pay me in brisket sandwiches, and I'd probably throw in an advertising package. No, know. If you're like me, you've stuck around this long because you love metal and plastic and the people in our industry. So here's a quote that might help us all out. Great one by real estate investor Jared James. Change is not what eliminates people. The inability to pivot and adjust is what eliminates people. Isn't that good? One pivot we've talked about is sidelines. Let's look at four in 2024. I personally believe 25% of your income should be mailbox money. Something to aim for. Here's another pivot. Being intentional to show care. High love for those around you as they need it. A lot of people are struggling right now, and it's good practice. Why? Because the path to prosperity is and always has been through people. I should cross-stitch that. Serving them, laying down what we get out of it, and getting into their world, as it's only there that we can even have a vantage point to know just how to help them, how to be a resource, how to bring value, which sideline, which BMP, right? No one's going to shake me from this belief. Success in 2024 and beyond belongs to those who put people first. Whether you're an ASR, surgeon, or a CEO, everything seems to take care of itself from there. So let's bring back that positive family atmosphere. It starts with us. And if you want to talk about what outside the box might mean in your territory, organization, or surgical practice, BMPs, sidelines, or whatever offline, we're always available for people. Hit us up on LinkedIn. Lot to think about, but it's all good. I'm going to say that again. It is all good, and it's such an honor and a privilege to do it all alongside you. The best of the best. Hope you have a wonderful week, people, and we'll see you at the sink.